I never felt like I was opening a retail business. I felt like I was starting my own social experiment. You know, I got to teach about it and learn about it for so many years. It's so much fun doing it. So much more fun than teaching about it, I gotta say.
Is having teachers about have, has is having taught about urban geography, has that informed what you're doing?
Oh,
Like,
for sure. Yeah.
do
Yeah. I
you
mean, because I used to
similarly?
teach about third spaces and like diverse communities and community development and main streets. You know, I used to talk about main street development and yeah, actually getting to be part of a main street and watching how it evolves and actually not having to step back and be the academic observer, being like, I get to throw myself into this and see if I can tweak all the knobs and buttons. You know, it's actually, I gotta say, a lot of fun. But also, I come to some of the civic organizations having that background, so I do also get asked to think or talk about different things. But mostly, I'm sort of just fascinated by how these things evolve on their own. You know, no one person ever shapes a community or a main street. Not normally. It's like it's all these little micro interactions between all these different groups all the time. You know, and I'm sort of in the fishbowl down here where I get to see so much of it going on a daily basis. You know. I get to see who's walking around, who's talking to who. You know, there's this little feed of rumors that come through the shop all the time. You know. Yeah, it's totally fascinating. I think some people get burnt out on that aspect of small towns, but I think if you really embrace the sort of the microcosm of intense small communities, then it's endlessly fascinating. You know. You lose a lot of the anonymity. People know all your business too. But you get to be so deeply and intimately involved in other people's lives in a way that doesn't happen, I think, when you live in a suburb. You know, and not even as much as when you live in a city, although, you know, oftentimes in places like New York City, each little neighborhood is like its own tiny little village, so it does happen in some ways there, but yeah, I mean, there's a balancing act that goes on, you know. There's tons of people who are willing to help at any time if you need anything. At the same time, everybody knows when you need help. Yeah. But I think for people who balance that well, living in small towns is not, I mean, I think there's a, and this is part of the sort of the reaction some people get. Like, I'll get people from the city coming in here and they'll be like, what is there to do here? And I'll be like, what isn't there to do here? I could go out 6 nights a week. But part of that is just sort of really getting involved in a small community, you know? I think there's this stereotype that small communities aren't vibrant or that they're sort of boring or stifling, that you can't be unique, that there isn't a lot of opportunity, that you don't have diversity of identities. And if anything, I think the more you sort of dig down into these small communities, the crazier it gets, the more interesting the minutia becomes, you know, and you realize, oh my gosh, everybody's an oddball. They all have these crazy stories going on. There's a million weird projects going on simultaneously any given day in this town, and they're all sort of fascinating because you get to hear about them, you know, you get to really, and then you get to interact with the people who are doing them, you know, you don't have to be seeing it all from a distance. Yeah. That's part of the fascinating part. A friend and I were out the other morning digging through old barn wood from a collapsed barn that had been swept down the creek in Hurricane Irene that another friend had told us about. And as we were digging through there, we were like, oh, this other friend's probably going to want some of this too. So that person was here last night. So then we were like, oh, there's all this barn wood we're digging through. And he's like, oh, let's figure out another time we go through and keep digging through it. You know, it's just like, and then he's like, I think I know another person who might need some of it. Meanwhile, the original person was like, I want to have a big bonfire. And we're like, we're going to salvage most of this before you manage to burn it. There might be a little bit left over to burn at the end, but you know, just the connection to the connection to the connection. It's like, I'm pretty sure most of that structure is going to go into some weird vernacular architecture project out at my friend's farm, and the rest of it's going to be bookshelves up on my second floor. You know, there might be a few weird little rotten scraps left that this dude can burn. But yeah, I mean, that's just sort of how it works around here. You know, one person has a resource and they mention it to another person, and suddenly a fifth person down the line is wandering into the shop being like, I heard you have some barnwood.
What's the process of building that network been like?
Pretty organic. Yeah. Most of it is just the fact that a lot of us live within walking distance of each other here, so you don't have to plan a lot. You know, once you meet a few people, it's like, and certainly cell phones and technology have helped this immeasurably, but, you know, I have a friend who'll be cooking up a big pot of ramen noodle soup or something, and he'll send out a text to two or three of us being like, there's soup, it'll be ready in 2 hours. And then that will get forwarded to another person, somebody else will water in, and I'll be like, so-and-so's making soup. You know? And, you know, so like literally 2 hours after this guy sends out the text, there'll be six of us showing up in his kitchen to eat soup, you know? But we all live in Walker. I mean, it's pretty organic. Like, you don't really have to plan out a lot of stuff around here, which is also the thing I love. You know, when you live in suburban areas or even when you live in a big city, people's lives are just incredibly busy. There's not a lot of spontaneity that goes on. And around here, we can sort of just be spontaneous, you know? If I want to go swimming up in a lake tonight, I can probably text two or three friends, and at least one of them is going to want to go swimming a couple hours from now, and they will come to the shop. This is a good meeting point. We will go off and go swimming. You know? We didn't have to schedule it last week, basically. So, yeah. Some of it's the geography, just the fact that the majority of us live within walking distance of each other. And some of it is just sort of the flexibility of our lives, I think. I mean, certainly within my peer group, most of us don't have kids. Most of us are self-employed. There's a lot of artists and writers. So we certainly have some of that control over our own lives and schedules that we can be spontaneous. But yeah, I think some of it's just Catskill. And, you know, we joke about Catskill all the time, too. But in a kind and loving way. Because we hear all the sort of stigmas about Catskill, and we sort of just embrace them all at this point.
I wanted to ask... You started off, like, early on in this interview talking about Philmont and, like, the high mountains of New Mexico. Mm-hmm. And about the I always blank on the name of the road. Across...
Oh, the Connell Divide.
I just wanted to ask you about your sense of landscape here, like beyond the town itself.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think one of the things that really attracts me about Catskill is it seems to have components that remind me of a bunch of other different places that I've lived in. So, like the Hudson Valley, all the little farms remind me a bit of central Pennsylvania because I grew up, you know, a little bit outside of this college town where there was a lot of farms, a lot of dairy farms, just a lot of barns and people who had sort of a more rural lifestyle. So certainly a lot of the valley area reminds me of that. All these little towns in the Catskills, like Woodstock and Phoenicia, they remind me a lot of these little sort of funky old hippie towns in the foothills of Colorado. Like the Catskills themselves look a bit like the foothills of the Rockies, just without the huger mountains behind them. But when you're in the foothills in the Rockies, you often can't see the bigger mountains behind them. You know, when you go up to Estes Park or go up to these little towns above Boulder, you know, it's like there's a certain kind of social vibe going on there of a lot of older artists who sort of retreated there in the 60s and 70s and built these funky little towns with these weird little coffee shops and, you know, these eclectic art things going on and lots of like Zen Buddhist retreats. And, you know, there's probably 5 Zen Buddhist retreats just within 2 counties of here. You know, I mean, there's definitely a similarity, I think, in terms of the mountain vibe going on here. But I really like the river. I like being able to go canoeing and kayaking. I didn't get to do that in Pennsylvania growing up. There's not a lot of natural bodies of water in Pennsylvania, at least not in central Pennsylvania. There's a couple of reservoirs, but that's about it. And I like the easy access to the city, even if I don't go down there that often right now because working in the shop. You know, I still have a lot of friends and social connections down there. I like the fact that the option is there, that in 2 hours I can be hanging out with really good friends of mine that are still down there. Yeah, I like sort of that combo of the water culture, the boating culture, the access to the city, the rural farm life, and then the mountain sort of artist culture that all seem to combine here. But at the end of the day, Catskill itself, the fact that it's a more traditional Main Street village, is probably the heart of it for me. You know, I go do all those other things when I have some time off or when I want to escape for a little bit, but I would say 90% of my life evolves around this Main Street. I mean, there's like a new Welcome Center farmers market thing popping up, and I'm going to be helping them redesign their retail space and all their windows. So it's like over the next few weeks, a lot of my free time is going to be spent 2 blocks from here. That thing of losing my car because I haven't driven it in 4 days, that's the most of the summer. But I also, you know, for the last 8 years I've played Ultimate Frisbee down in Woodstock, so I haven't played much in the last month or two, but usually I'm down there 2 or 3 times a week in the evenings or on Sundays playing Frisbee with a group of people down there. And that reminds me, I mean, and there's a lot of people who play down there who've lived on and off in Colorado as well, you know. Yeah, it's just there's an interesting intersection of a lot of worlds here. That having moved around all these other places, there were always things I loved about those places, even if I didn't want to live there for the rest of my life. So it's been nice to sort of be able to capture some of those aspects in one place. I mean, that's pretty much what sold me on Catskill and moving here permanently and really trying to set up a life here that was going to be long term. You know, because it seemed to combine all these elements of all these other places that I liked.
Before we get into the last couple of questions, I guess, I just wanted to ask about the book business. What do you, like, see as someone who is a bookseller?
You know, the economics of the used book business is interesting. I think there's a lot more space for independent bookstores to open up now. The online book dealing sort of leveled out, like ebooks have sort of plateaued, in part because they're expensive. If you read a lot of books, you can rack up a huge credit card bill with an e-reader. Used books are a third the price of ebooks. And then, you know, with borders closing down and Barnes & Noble dialing back, and also a lot of people, like from here, you have to drive 40 minutes to get to a Barnes & Noble. And new books are also just very expensive, you know? So partly I think there's more space not only for small independent booksellers, but also for used booksellers to sort of come back into the market that communities missed having their own bookstore. But I think, you know, again, I think selling books is maybe not even 50% of the purpose of the shop. You know, it needs to be there so that it's sustainable. And I love having conversations with people about books and asking them what they've really enjoyed, and then trying to, like, it's this amazing game to try to find a book that they'll like next. You know, basically, you know, we talk about what they liked about certain books, and then it's like you're on this hunt to try to find something else that they'll like next. And that's really gratifying when they come back in and say that they loved it. You know, it's like, you win. But again, I think building a community around myself, the fact that I'm sort of engaging in my own little social experiment here is sort of the thing that is very motivating for me, you know? So, and it's interesting, you know, I go to large book sales around the Northeast, so I do travel to Massachusetts and Connecticut and upstate New York to pick out a lot of the books, and I meet other dealers, and there's this whole community of booksellers, and it's fascinating to go to these sales and to think about what are people reading. You know, when you're buying a couple hundred books in one afternoon, it's like, and you're in there with 100 other dealers and they're all snatching up books too. It's both like a competitive sport and an intellectual exercise simultaneously to try to do that. So that's been really interesting to learn how to do. Yeah, just a lot of different aspects of it are interesting. But certainly the social community component, I think, is probably one of the main priorities. You know, it was really important to me when I was setting up the space that there was space to have community events, that there was space to have music, that there was space to have book clubs. I mean, there are a lot of great used bookstores out there that have a ton of material where you can barely wind your way through the aisles and you can spend hours in there digging around for a book, but that's a very solo exercise, you know? It's like you're not going to form a community necessarily or have a deep hour-long conversation with two or three other people in those spaces just because physically you can't, you know? You sort of have to somewhat think forward and design for the community that you want and then provide a space that is going to work with that and then hope that it happens. Yeah, a lot of people come in and say that they just are really happy that there's a bookstore in town again. There used to be four or five back in the 70s and 80s. Yeah, and then for the last 10 years, there's been nothing. More than 10 years, there hadn't been a bookstore in Catskill. And for a long time, I thought I might be the only bookstore in the county. I think there is another little one up in a little town near here, but I think they're only open sort of on weekends. I have yet to hit them when they're open, basically. It's on my list of projects is to try to get in there and actually meet them. But there's another really lovely woman who has a book barn over across the river in Columbia County, and when I first went in there and told her I was opening up a bookstore over here, she was so supportive and so nice, and she was like, she basically like, it's so amazing that somebody younger is gonna go into this, because she's like, my whole generation is hitting the end of our careers, you know, we're, you know, even if we don't retire, we're sort of, you know, hitting the end of doing the book business. And for a long time there, they only saw their peers closing shops and nobody reopening them, you know, and I think it was disheartening for a lot of them to go from having, you know, 10, 12 peers within their immediate geography to being the only holdout left, you know. So yeah, when I talk to older booksellers, they're all really supportive and enthusiastic that anybody's reopening shops. So yeah, so I would say it's been sort of a universally positive experience opening up a small bookstore. The community's been really supportive. The other booksellers are really happy that somebody younger is doing it. It's been great building a community in here. Occasionally I throw out my shoulder carrying really heavy bags of books. That's probably the only downside so far. The fact that my beagle didn't like the back room. Yeah. Other than that, it's been good.
Just wanted to give you a chance to ask any questions if you have them.
Paying me back for when I did this to you the other day when you were recording. It does take you by surprise. You're like, oh, I'm in like listening mode. No, I think I'm good.
Okay.
I'll let you know if I think of something.
Sure.
It's been great.
Oh.
There's music.
Music just popped on upstairs. Oh, our contractor got here. Start work. What time is it?
It's about 25-ish, 9:25-ish.
Okay.
Again, my watch does not
yeah.
keep the best time, but it's within a few minutes of 9:25.
Cool.
Yeah,
do you guys have any final questions, or should we wrap it up?
I just wanted to ask if you have anything that you wanted to add that you haven't had a chance to talk about.
I can't think of anything off the top of my head. Yeah, I feel like I covered a nice survey of all the fun things I've done. I mean, certainly things like hiking the Camino de Santiago, I could probably talk about for days. That's like it's almost its own subset of experiences. Same thing with Philmont. It's like I could probably tell Philmont stories for several hours because there were a lot of crazy people there and crazy things that went on. Same thing with Catskill. You know, you just see funny things all the time where you're like, did somebody really just do that? And you think, yep, they did. And we're all going to be talking about it for the next week. Oh, but yeah. This has been a fun experience.
Thank you so much.
Thank you guys for asking me to do it. This was great.
All right. This has been Jeff Nagel and Jess Holler with the Oral History Summer School Hudson Community Memory Project. Here with Christy Gibson. It's Saturday, July 2nd, 2016. Thank you for listening.